It is the time of day that I look for weekly when we talk to Arthur Schwartz. And this is also when I do the list of the food maven, the food maverick, the food mensch. Did we do mensch? Have you done mensch recently?
I like mensch. You know, mensch has, it really just means person, but it has a more, I don't know, general understanding.
Yeah, no, it's a good, if you're a mensch, you want to be a mensch is the law.
I definitely want to be a mensch.
Right, so you are a mensch. We are grateful.
To my
father,
that
was
like the ultimate call.
What are we talking about?
He's a mensch. Well, what are we talking about? Is there any other subject besides Thanksgiving? I mean, food-wise? Not really. I mean, I went to Whole Foods on this past Saturday, forgetting that it was the Saturday before Thanksgiving, and I've never seen the store so crowded. It's a big store, so it didn't feel crowded, but I knew it was by the parking lot. I have to say, when Whole Foods first opened near me, I thought it was a terrible store but a great parking lot. They have heat lamps over the cars. So in the winter, your car doesn't freeze up. And then, by the way, protected from snow. And I could go on and on about the great parking lot. But it ends up, it's turned out to be the best store in the area. And people think it's expensive, but it's not. So moving on here. It is Thanksgiving week, and I don't think anybody at this point needs instruction with the turkey, and I'm not the one to give it in any case. I mean, I've made some successful turkeys in my life, but it's not a bird that I love, so I don't go, you know, and I always say, since it became diet food 30 years ago, it really doesn't interest me. On the other hand, they're really beautifully, beautifully roasted turkey is something to behold and can be very good. So, but I'm more interested in side dishes, and the fact is I have not made turkeys because we don't really want to eat turkey, but I buy a No Dines smoked turkey, which is a gorgeous thing, and put it in the middle of the table as a centerpiece. But the side dishes do interest me. I like a lot of side dishes. It has to include some kind of stuffing or dressing, of course. I favor mashed potatoes over anything. I mean, I don't indulge in them regularly, so it is a treat for me to have mashed potatoes. I love cauliflower, and we eat a lot of cauliflower all winter. It's a very healthy vegetable. But the way I like to do it special is the way my grandma Rose did it, which was with breadcrumbs. I guess you could say this is sort of Polish style. I steam the cauliflower until it's nice and tender. We don't like hard cauliflower. And in a skillet, I saute some breadcrumbs. Now, my grandmother, she wasn't kosher. But she would not have done this with butter, but I do it with butter. Melt a lot of butter. Put in some dry breadcrumbs, not the seasoned kind. And saute them until they start getting toasty. And then you put in the cauliflower. As soon as you put in the cauliflower, which has a lot of moisture, the breadcrumbs are going to stop getting brown, and you want them to be brown. And toss your cauliflower in these buttery breadcrumbs for a few minutes. And by the way, as far as it being Thanksgiving and everybody seems to want to do everything ahead, the cauliflower you could even do the day before, steam it off, and then at the last minute just put it in with the breadcrumbs. Well, bring it to room temperature, by the way, before you start heating it up with the breadcrumbs. There's another way I do cauliflower that is best served at room temperature. So you could even do it in the morning and serve it in the afternoon. And that is cauliflower dipped in a mixture of beaten egg and grated cheese, Parmigiano, could be Pecorino if you like Pecorino better, could be a mixture of the both, a grana padana. They're a grating, an Italian grating cheese. And you dip the already steamed till tender cauliflower in this mixture, of, and then fry it. And I use olive oil for that. And until the egg coating gets a little bit browned all around. That I ate once. I mean, not once, but I have eaten as an antipasto in Sicily. And that's how I got that recipe. So it's really Sicilian. Now, another thing that I do for Thanksgiving, would do for Thanksgiving if I was cooking, is I like cabbage. Cabbage is very, very healthy. And you can just put a glob of butter in a deep pot and shredded cabbage with a few tablespoons of water. Oh, I washed my shredded cabbage at the last minute, and whatever water is clinging to the cabbage is usually enough to cook it. Now, I say cabbage, after 15 minutes, is so sweet and tender enough that I like it that way. But if you want it really tender, just keep cooking. Low heat, covered pot. It'll steam itself. If you think it's getting a little dry, usually it gets more wet than dry. You can always add a couple tablespoons of water. I sometimes throw in, because I like the taste, a couple of tablespoons of apple cider vinegar, or other vinegar for that matter. What else?
I got to go back to Elsie for 1 second. There just is the cauliflower cooked already, or does she just cook it naked starting in the breadcrumb?
Who are we talking about? My grandmother?
Yeah.
No, she would have boiled it.
Okay.
I steam it. I steam everything. For one thing, it's quicker than boiling. People don't realize this. It only takes a couple of minutes for an inch of water at the bottom of a pot to come to a boil. And you have a steamer. I have one of those collapsible steamers that you can buy in the supermarket, and I use it all the time. I have two, one for a small pot, one for a big pot. And that's it. And you put your whatever you're steaming, vegetable, on top of that collapsible steamer or whatever.
And
they
turn into those little pedal things, and they have different sizes. The steamers.
Well, it's the pedal thing. But the thing is, the big one does not fit in my 4-quart.
I have the same
casserole, which is what I steam in mostly. It comes up over the edge, so you can't cover the pot. So that one is for when I'm doing a big, big pot, and I'm doing a lot of. Anyway, I have two. They cost like $3 each, so I could have six.
Right.
But one for I don't have to explain anymore. Here's something that I for years and years I did not have to cook Thanksgiving. Because, for one thing, I worked on Thanksgiving.
Right.
I was on the radio answering last-minute emergency Thanksgiving questions. But then it was my sister's holiday. So I had to schlep to New Jersey from Midtown Manhattan after I got off the radio at 1 o'clock. And so I never got to do Thanksgiving, really. Maybe I once or twice brought some baked good or other. I was more likely to buy something. Or bring wine. In any case, when I did have to start cooking it myself, one of the things that, I always had a problem with the first course at Thanksgiving. I'm not sure you need a first course, actually. If you're going to have a turkey with all the trimmings, and they can be many, many, including two kinds of potato, sweet potato and white potato, a lot of families do that, including mine. You really don't need a first course. But then again, you all sit down at the table. I don't know. It's sort of nice. It's a festive meal. And I used to like the idea of chowder, clam chowder, as a first course. But then I got into this jag, and it ends up, it's got to be close to 20 years ago, of making gnocchi of butternut squash. This is something I learned from my friend Cecilia. I don't know where she got the recipe from, but I worked it out, and I really think they're wonderful, and I should probably make them just for their own sake and doesn't have to be Thanksgiving. So let me give you this recipe. Now, I just bought a butternut squash to make this with, and I had to choose carefully because in some markets I find the squash are too small, and in some I find they're too big. And what you want to look for is a 3-pound butternut squash, at least. Maybe 3.5 pounds is okay. You don't want to run out. So what you do, you can cook the squash in many ways, but I usually just cut it lengthwise, scoop out the seeds, put it on a baking sheet with a quarter of an inch of water, stick it in a 400-degree oven. Usually takes close to an hour. How I know it's done is I take the point of a small sharp knife and I stick it in the solid, narrower end to make sure that it's fully tender. You've got to remember the bottom, the bulbous end, is not that big, so it probably cooks actually quicker than the fat end. By the way, you can do this in a microwave, too. If you know how to handle this in a microwave, as we say in Yiddish, go in good health, gesundheit. Anyway, what you want to end up with is soft enough squash to puree it in a food processor. You're going to need several cups of this puree. So do a little at a time. I would not try to do the whole lot at once. You want a pretty smooth puree. And pour the puree into a strainer. Put that over a bowl and let it in the refrigerator, preferably. If you don't have room, you can leave it overnight outside, and let it drip. It's going to give off some moisture. To make the gnocchi batter itself, measure out 2 cups of this puree, put it in a bowl with 1 egg and how much flour? I would say 3/4 cup of flour, 1 teaspoon of salt. Yes, you need as much as 1 teaspoon of salt. A good amount of freshly ground pepper, 1/4 teaspoon minimum. Also, freshly grated nutmeg. Now, I don't have in my house grated nutmeg, but I do know from history that when I did, that it goes lame pretty quick. I mean, you can't keep it for more than a year. That's why I have whole nutmegs, and I grate as I need it. They last forever, it seems. At least the ones I have are years old, and they're still very, very fragrant when you grate them. And most, by the way, most four-sided box graters have a side that's fine enough to grate nutmeg, but I have nutmeg graters. Anyway, so put that in your batter and mix it all up. And what you should end up with is a batter of squash that you can form into ovals on a spoon, but also firm enough to push off the spoon and they'll be nice looking. Bring to cook them, by the way, so how I do this is a little tricky, but anybody who's ever made dumplings can do this in a second. But you scoop up a rounded teaspoonful of your batter and go back and forth with it between 2 spoons, similarly sized spoons. And as you do this, you drop them into your boiling water. Now, you're going to need a full pot, like a 3-4-quart saucepan full of rolling boiled water, and put in some salt as well, at least I would say 1 teaspoon of salt. So with these 2 spoons, you form your gnocchi, or gnocco, singular, and push them right into the boiling water and go as fast as you can. The first one comes, stop when the first gnocco comes to the surface. Then all the gnocchi will surface within the next 3 minutes. You can count. And using a slotted spoon or what they call a spider, which is this Chinese net implement that's very handy for these things. scoop up your cooked gnocchi and put them on a plate, and just keep repeating until you finish them. These get dressed in the end with sage butter, so you can make them ahead. Really, it takes 3 or 4 minutes to cook them at the most. You'll have a big tray of gnocchi. I would say put a little butter on the pan you're going to put the cooked gnocchi on so that they don't stick. You're going to put butter on them in the end anyway. And you can refrigerate them. And then when you're ready to bake them on Thanksgiving, all you need to do is put them in an appropriate pan that will go in the oven, top them with some melted butter that you've melted with some sage leaves, let it sizzle in the butter for a few minutes. But, you know, you can brown the butter or not brown the butter. It's up to you. It's your taste. I don't usually brown the butter. And that's it. You put that the sage butter evenly over the gnocchi, and you can throw them in the oven for 20 minutes, a 350 oven. Or Thanksgiving, you got to remember, you're going to have reheating things, and I don't know what temperature your oven's going to be. It really doesn't matter. You can put these in any degree oven you want. If there's a 400-degree oven because you're roasting vegetables, so you put them in for a few minutes less, it goes like that. You got to use your judgment. And by the way, these get served with ample grated cheese. So I'm getting hungry for these.
Yeah, the butter, I understand. I would put a special cheese grater, a person who grates cheese, on duty. I was just thinking, though, people, you know how people have other people bring sides?
Yes, I don't like that.
Yeah, I understand. And, you know, I'm too much of a control. Anyway, do you have any recommendations around that?
Well, I do. Well, these are wonderful for that. I mean, if you want to go to the trouble of making these. But here's something super duper easy. I found everybody loves it. And it's a seasonal, you know, Thanksgiving kind of dish, and that is puree of sweet potato with ginger. Now, this is a three-ingredient recipe from my friend Roseanne Gold, who wrote a whole series of three-ingredient cookbooks. And this one is from Healthy 123, published, 23 years ago. Seems like yesterday. I'm sounding old, aren't I? But I have to say that this is one of my favorite all-time sweet potato recipes, and it doesn't have any sugar. So let me just tell you what it is. This is her proportions. 4 large sweet potatoes, which Roseanne says should amount to about 3 pounds of sweet potatoes, you boil them. Scrape out the flesh, put it in a food processor with the juice of 2 juice oranges, meaning Florida oranges usually, or the juicy ones, plus the zest from 1. Plus, and here's so 1 was sweet potato, 2 is orange, and the 3rd ingredient is fresh ginger. And Roseanne wants you to, by the way, Your orange juice should amount to about 2/3 of a cup of orange juice. And your ginger, should finely chopped, should be about 1/4 cup, quite a lot of ginger. That would be, I would say, a minimum 4-inch piece of ginger, fat piece of ginger. Anyway, about 1/4 cup finely chopped. And salt. You probably won't need pepper because ginger is so peppery. And that's it. You put it all in the food processor and whip it. Put it in a casserole dish and take it to your friend. And by the way, it's reheatable in the microwave. So if you bring it in a reheatable microwave dish, there's nothing to it. Your friend will be forever grateful. So I would make this even for myself. It's so good. And I'm Mr. Harned, meaning Bob, who I also cook for, does not eat sweet potatoes. It's totally a psychological thing. His father forced him to eat sweet potatoes when he was a boy because, I guess, in Hawaii they were a cheap thing to eat. In any case, he can't touch a sweet potato now. Although he told me, he confessed the other day that he has liked in the past sweet potato fries. Of course, that is the form of sweet potatoes I least like. And I'm certainly not going to fuss with frying potatoes Anyway, so I got into this potato thing. It's not rebellion, but it's deprivation. I haven't had a sweet potato in years. So I just bought these gorgeous purple sweet potatoes, which are always so sweet. And I'm going to bake them. Well, two. I'm going to bake them about 400 degrees, probably take close to an hour. And then I'm going to reheat them the day after, refrigerate and reheat. And I'm going to reheat them in the microwave. I remember doing this 1,000 years ago and thinking, if you want to eat sweet potatoes, this is the way to go. They somehow the flavor and sugar intensity increases. Something must go on with the starches when they're reheated. I recently learned that rice is better for you if it's recooked, meaning you to save that leftover rice, because if you make fried rice the next day, it's better for you. Something happens, I think I know, with the starch that makes it easier. It becomes more of a complex carbohydrate, something like that, when exposed to the heat that way. So anyway, I may not even eat turkey.
You may not have to.
No, I know I don't have to.
Oh, it's funny, every single one of these, and maybe it's just because of the time we're recording, but it all sounds delicious.
No, I know. But it's the side dishes, Jill.
Yeah.
You know, here's one that I make regularly because it's so easy. Baked mushrooms with breadcrumbs. We talked about breadcrumbs a few weeks ago. My house is a lot of breadcrumbs. So that's not, and by the way, at Whole Foods the other day, they had these huge boxes of sliced mushrooms, already sliced, nice white, that looked like they were, had just been sliced, mushrooms, and they were on sale for nothing, practically. I don't know what people make with those, but it must be a Thanksgiving thing. For instance, they were out of sage. This big supermarket actually sold out of sage. I was not the only person at the fresh herb refrigerator looking for sage. We all commiserated. No sage! Now, of course, if you live in the northwest corner of Connecticut, you probably still have sage in your garden. I remember sage is the most... what's the word in gardening, Jill? Hardy. H-A-R-D-Y, hardy. It's the most hardy of herbs. And I remember harvesting it. Actually, I would harvest it a few weeks before Thanksgiving because I wanted it dried. Nowadays, I prefer it fresh, but that was a while ago. Now, we are actually going to go out to eat for Thanksgiving, which is something I don't like to do, but we seem to, if we want to be festive, it seems to be the thing to do this year. And what can I say? They have things on the menu that are very not Thanksgiving, and I might decide to go for the not Thanksgiving dishes. Anyway. But I do miss some. I'm going to miss some of these things. So in the next week or two, I may be, for instance, making banana pudding, which is something that I made standard at my Thanksgiving dinners when I was doing them. And my banana pudding, I have to say, it's not my banana pudding. It's a food writer named Gene Anderson, who was one of my mentors. Anyway, Gene was a sensational recipe developer and food writer and wrote many cookbooks. And this banana pudding is probably in her southern cookbooks. Jean was actually from Raleigh-Durham and moved back there from Gramercy Park when she semi-retired, but it took many, many years before she actually really retired. Anyway, she died just a year or so ago, and her banana pudding has become my banana pudding. And the truth is, the custard itself is divine. And banana pudding is really all about the custard and the bananas. You got to have, for this recipe anyway, 6 really ready-to-eat, nicely ripened but firm bananas. So it's a big recipe. Anyway, let me give you the pudding recipe. It's standard custard, I've got to say. You mix 3/4 of a cup of sugar, 1/3 of a cup of flour, your plain all-purpose flour, 1/4 of a teaspoon of salt, maybe a little more. These days I use a little more. That's your dry ingredients. And you mix them up in a heavy-bottomed saucepan. Separately, beat together 1/4 of whole milk. I told you this is a big recipe. 1 cup of half and half, and 3 large eggs in a separate bowl beat together. Heat up your milk and half together, and use a few spoonfuls of the hot milk mixture. Beat that into your 3 large eggs, and when that's called tempering the eggs. You don't want to throw in all this hot liquid to the eggs suddenly, because they'll scramble. This way, where you gradually heat the eggs and they won't scramble. So you've got 1/4 milk plus 1 cup of half and half, 3 large eggs, and put that over medium low heat. If you want to do this in a double boiler, you can. I don't. I have a perfect heavy bottom pot for it. And you got to stand and stir. There's no two ways about it. Stirring constantly. If it's going to take 7 or 8 minutes at least over moderate heat until the mixture simmers and starts thickening, remove it from the heat immediately. That's when you put the hot mixture into the beaten eggs, put it back on the stove, and if you want to take its temperature, it should reach 160 degrees. If not, just keep stirring slowly until it thickens up nicely and doesn't boil. You can stir in the flavoring, which is about 1.5 teaspoons or so of vanilla extract, and start layering your pudding. Now, I make this in what's called a trifle bowl. I bought it at a tag sale 1,000 years ago, and it's become one of my favorite things. I actually come up with recipes just so I can use it. It's a deep, clear glass bowl on a stem, on a short stem. And I guess it's tulip-shaped, you would say. So what I do here is, you want to do this while the pudding is still warm. Put some of the pudding at the bottom of the dish, and then pave over it with vanilla wafers. Now, Nilla, N-I-L-L-A, are the traditional, I think, in the Nabisco cookie. But these days you can find imitations that are better for you, meaning they don't have additives, blah, blah, blah. But I do remember that the vanilla wafers, came in a 12-ounce box. And you're going to need about 3/4 of a 12-ounce box for this to make this whole recipe. So in my custard bowl, in my trifle bowl, I make many layers, starting with custard, then with a banana. Slice the banana is about 1/3 of an inch thick, 1/4 of an inch thick. Then the cookies, then more hot pudding, and keep going until you finished it all up. And by the way, you can make the pudding one day, but it's not as good. You really want it to be warm so that it soaks into the cookies a bit. I had a banana pudding made not by me, but by a restaurant the other day.
I think this is probably, I'm pretty sure we're out of time, and I want to wish you happy Thanksgiving, but I also want to say this isn't the $6.1 million banana or whatever that was allegedly sold.
No, this is not art, this is food.
Yeah.
So anyway, everybody have a great Thanksgiving. Don't argue too much.
No, nobody should be arguing at all.
Well, nobody should be.
They shouldn't. Try and give thanks. The idea of Thanksgiving
well,
is not
to... Well, I give thanks every day that I wake up.
And Arthur Schwartz, the food maven maverick mensch on Robin Hood Radio.